Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Mr. Matt Byrne on the board. We have Greg Pappas in studio. In a little bit, we'll have Mr. John Flanagan and Audrey Johnson. So we got a full Monday, as usual. A lot of interesting subjects. The market is down a little bit. S&P futures down 18. NASDAQ futures down 107. We have all kinds of antics going on in the city here with the election. We have the NCAAs. Why don't we start with the NCAAs? What do you think, Greg? No major upsets. I watched some of the girls. The Irish girls look good, but although I think they're not going to make it too much further with their only seven people dressed up or whatever they have. But well,
I think the Illini have it pretty tough considering everyone else had a, or at least the good teams had, you know, easy cruise to this UConn, and they UConn, and who else won by double digits?
Purdue was huge.
Yeah. It was just...
But they beat an eight seed. I mean, he beat Utah State. They weren't horrible. Purdue just had a big game. They said no, they couldn't stop that kid in the middle.
Right.
Duke clobbered James Madison, too. It's like 40
points.
Their luck
ran out.
Yeah. And it's, seems like everybody gets the, you know, the first round jitters. Once the chalk, I'll call it, gets the game under them, you know, they usually act like the chalk. I mean, Houston barely beat Texas A&M, though. That was close.
But yeah, that was probably closer than it should have been. I think this Iowa State-Illinois game is going to be the highlight, though. It looks like a great matchup.
Who's the team? I think they played yesterday.
What's his name? Putting on a show for the draft scouts. The Shannon from Illinois is...
Yeah.
Looking, he's increased his stock for sure in the first couple games.
Well, just to give an idea of this portal and what's happening, although I guess it's going to come back a little bit this year, right, because the COVID extra years are running out.
Yeah.
But I think it was Utah State. I'm not positive. The guy doesn't have one person on his team that scored a point last year. Everybody's new.
Wow.
I mean, how does that work? He's got everybody out of the portals. So okay, we got a new team. Let's get some guys.
That's one of the benefits of that setup, meaning you can go grab three guys and immediately you're starting.
I think you can grab 10.
You can grab 10, I guess, yeah.
Now, of course, in the portal, there's all kinds of things about the education at the other place and so forth.
Got to make sure that you pass.
Yeah. God. How much?
That was a concern in West Virginia. After Huggins got, you know, dismissed or left or whatever,
kicked
his players. Yeah, there were some of them that got in a fight with the assistant coach who took over because he made him go to class or something. And one of them, I don't know if he was kicked off, but he definitely left. And it was it was academic concerns.
Well, I mean, the guys that absolutely don't want to go to school now have the other league, so I think that's nicer.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to masquerade as a college student for a year just to become a pro. So what, you can't get drafted until you're out of high school a year, isn't that the idea now or something?
What does that mean, though? Can you do AAU for a year?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's
yeah, that's what the league is in Florida. Or, where is it, Atlanta or Florida? Kevin knows all about it.
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, if you looked at the NFL draft last year, NFL, the NBA draft last year, I think that out of the top 15 people, maybe 3, 4, 5 of them were from that league. They weren't from a school, right?
So, yeah, they
or from
have
Europe,
to,
I mean.
There's that requirement that makes them. But really the exposure, I think, and what's related to the tournament is better than whatever they got. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you shouldn't have to go to college just to, if that's going to be your career. I mean, which I think these guys all think that's going to be their career, but not very many of them make it. But if they think that's going to be their career, I guess they, you know, shouldn't have to masquerade as a college student. You know, I mean, why would you? The you know, I guess I'm not so sure which is right or which is wrong. I mean, I have no clue on that. But the fact that every sport is so different is somewhat odd, don't you think?
For the requirements to get in?
Well, I mean, for instance, baseball. You get drafted out of high school. If you say, I'm not signing with the Cubs lose the pick to you. I think they get some sort of compensatory pick, but I'm not positive. That's a Matt Weber question. But they lose you. Now, you can't get drafted again until after your junior year, unless you decide, wait a minute, I actually am that good, and say you've signed up for Notre Dame or someplace, or Illinois, to play baseball. You could drop back to a junior college, and then you're able to be drafted after 2 years because now you've actually graduated. So there's that little wrinkle there. Now, that's baseball.
So what if you graduate early?
Doesn't matter. Well, I mean, well, no, but you can't be drafted after your junior year. So the trick is to take as many classes and stuff during the summer to where you actually graduate after your junior year, which I guess you can do. You know, I don't know how that works, but evidently, I don't know if you can do. Let's put it this way: you're not going to do that in architecture. You're not going to do that in aerospace, right? Or pre-med, but you can. I guess you can do it. Some stuff. I mean, I'm trying to remember. Boy,
yeah, football probably would be a bigger concern just because of the size, strength, and, you know, maturity. That's kind of don't want. They're definitely not fully developed in body or head, so
well, I mean,
safety concerns
for
with that.
For football.
Basketball, I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But in basketball, you can get drafted after 1 year.
Yeah.
And I'm not, like I said, I'm not saying what the rules ought to be. It's just odd for me to that they're all so different. Now, hockey, for instance, this guy who just signed, or not signed up, he just started playing for the Hawks this week. He graduated Notre Dame. Notre Dame's season is over. But now they drafted him, I think, out of high school, or maybe after freshman year. So in college, you go to college, but the team retains the right to you. So you get drafted out of high school or out of the juniors in Canada, and you could play 4 years in Notre Dame, and they go, hey, Greg Pepis, property of the Chicago Blackhawks, he's playing for the Irish until he decides he wants to go become a pro.
Right.
So, I mean, it's I don't know which is right, if there is a right there, but the fact that there's four major sports and they're all different is kind of strange, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. I think North Carolina really did it, have done it the traditional way, at least for this year.
What do you mean?
They've got
they should have been disbanded. They cheated so much.
Well, they've got the I think the most experienced roster.
Yeah.
They're looking to.
But I mean, remember the Julius Peppers episode? What was he taking during the summer? Black history or something?
African studies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what happened in this, there's a lot of good to it. There's a
they
lot
make
of bad
them
to
pretend
it.
At least.
Well, if you come out of high school, I mean, when it, you know, in my day and for a long time after that, you know, let's face it, a lot of the athletes are not on a par of the rest of the students. Okay.
I mean,
some places they are, some places they aren't.
I think that's always been the case.
It depends on the school. I mean, you know, some schools aren't all that high end on the average student anyway. So, but the idea that you your first class is the day after Labor Day and you're just thrown in with, you know, all the guys and girls that are the top, you know, 5% of all the people in the country, you know, that's a bad day. But what they do now is you get right out of high school, you go for the summer. So you take probably two courses, I'm thinking, and you get acclimated, and maybe you find a tutor, and you're not just playing the game. You could actually, you get a head start, so at least you know what college is all about. So the day you have your first, I'm going to say fall class, you're at least have some kind of idea how to study, what's expected, how to take notes, those kinds of things. I would if you want to, but now of course you get the practice kind of all summer, Right, so you got two classes there. They don't let you go anymore. If young Greg Pappas now is a football player,
you have to be.
You're there all summer. You might get 2 weeks off. It's a full time job.
Right.
And so I mean, that's why why you shouldn't be an employee. I have no idea. I mean, it's not every other extracurricular activity. You don't have to spend the summer there. I mean, I don't think, do you?
It depends on the sport.
Well, I'm talking about if the coach
wants you to be. I guess if they're gonna pay for most of it, you can voluntarily go, depending on the practice rules. There's not an advantage to staying. You got all the facilities, you got all your...
Well, but they want you to stay, because they want you to take the classes, because they only want you taking...
I'm saying to stay home,
right?
Or
but
to stay and work, or do whatever you want.
Okay, but if you're playing football, all right, which is pretty tough, not to mention you have 6 o'clock in the morning workouts and film meetings and all that kind of stuff. They want you, even if it was you or me, I'm going to say decent students, they'd much rather have you take 2 classes in the summer, or believe me, they're not as hard. And I think I had to take, I don't know if you had to take 15 hours was the normal load for a semester at Notre Dame. Right? You could take 18 if you're trying to catch up or if you want to double major or something. I think you could also, I don't think you needed 15 for 8 semesters to graduate. I don't think you needed 120 hours. You probably needed 110, 105, boy, so long ago. But so if I'm a football player, I would rather take 2 in the summer and just take 9 hours, which is the minimum to stay in school in the fall, if I'm playing football.
Yeah, because you're practicing 5 hours a day or whatever.
Yeah, whatever you're doing. And you're leaving for games on, Thursday probably or something. Can't make Friday class. So if I could, I would take my hard classes in the spring. I'd take 3 easier ones in the fall, and I'd take 2 in the summer. And why wouldn't I? But now if I take a full load and maybe do 18 in the spring, if I'm a decent student, I'm out of there at the end of 3 years, right? So there's the summer before freshman year, the one after, and then the one between sophomore and junior. Well, that's 6 hours at least. All right, so if I take 15 or even 18 in the spring, I graduate. Right?
Yeah, they don't want that, though.
Well, a lot of these kids graduate after their junior year. That's why when they go to the draft, a lot of those kids have already graduated.
I'm going to take the under on that one.
I would say
maybe the top... No, not even the top prospects, just the people who are... No, that can't be the majority.
I'm just saying some of them they are graduating. A lot of them graduate their senior year in January.
Yeah,
they can go right to the. I mean, you're not going to go play for the Super Bowl, but they're not going to they're done then.
Yeah, they're done. And
if you want to,
I don't have anything against communications, but probably not in a serious hard major.
Well, it depends on the kid. I mean, some people, if you're in accounting, you can take your tough accounting courses in the spring.
Yeah.
But no.
What's the guy in the NFL? He's the NASA engineer.
Well, yeah. But
Dobbs.
The hardest, when I say there's a lot of hard majors in college, but the hardest one believe it or not, at Notre Dame, the only 5-year major when I was there was architecture. And they beat up on those guys for it was essentially a design and engineering all it was like a double major. Now my mother's cousin went to Ohio State and he took aerospace. Now that was 5 years there. And they got a serious aerospace program at Ohio State, I think. Well, they do at Notre Dame too, but somehow those guys cram it into 4 years. I never saw those guys.
Yeah, that's physics.
And all they did was study. I never saw those dudes.
Right.
But that, there's other guys. You see them all the time. You can take rocks for jocks and that kind of stuff. But I got a question for you and one for you.
The two academic all stars.
What does A&M stand for? You've heard it every year of your life. And how does nobody know? I mean, I'm wrong. I found I asked 3 people yesterday. Everybody said agriculture and mining. And then I actually thought that A&M, Texas A&M, was agriculture and military. But you know what it is?
What's that?
It's agricultural and mechanical.
mechanical. Okay, that makes more sense than mining.
Well, it leads into mining, but it's not the same. That A&M is actually the Agriculture and Mechanical College of Texas. Is the actual name of the school. I would never have guessed that.
No, me neither.
And how many years have I been watching Texas A&M play? Too many. So there you go. Agriculture and Mechanical. All right, so...
Agriculture and Mechanical in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Or no, Qatar.
Excuse me. Qatar. All right.
They got their deal in Tamu Q.
All right, Greg, take a few minutes and tell us, what is the status of the trading helper that's on? It's going to be on the Stocks and Jocks website and your other website.
That's going to get updated about 8:30 this morning, or maybe 9 o'clock this morning, and we'll have our ranges put up on the ticker section. And then also, if you log in, there'll be the option finder. So
now, what does that do?
Option finder is how you can select a strategy. So you input your assumptions, meaning where you think the stock's going or the time period, and if you want to pay for your position or get paid for your position. And then it suggests an option trade that you can ask your broker about.
And it suggests a few, right?
Yeah. It suggests maybe one.
So give me a for instance. If I say...
If you think Apple is going to, rebound, because it's gone down for a couple weeks, right?
Yep.
So you would type in, I think Apple's going to 180, and then put, do you want to pay for the position or get paid for the position? So it's a credit or debit spread. You select that, and then your time frame, so call it April. And then it would say, do you think it's going to stay in a range, or is it a directional trade? And in that one, you would select directional, and then it would say, well, maybe you might want to think about buying a call spread or selling a put spread. And it lists out based on, where you think the stock is going. So fun stuff. It makes makes options a lot more accessible. So you've got a trade idea. You can plug it in on your...
Will it graph it for you, or you have to do it yourself?
No. It just says the trade. And because the... Or we could do that if there's enough interest and enough feedback. But right now, it says the trade. The idea is you talk to your broker or plug it in your thing, your own platform. And what happens is it tells you your P&L and if the risk reward is right, and then you would, if you like that, then you'd make the trade. But otherwise, just back to the drawing board. If you don't like the risk reward on the trade, then you say, okay, well, maybe instead of paying for this position, I want to get paid for the position.
So if it's Apple and I'm bullish, it might say, I think it's going to 180. It might say, sell the 60-65 put spread. It might say buy the 75-80 call spread, and those kinds of things.
Right. And
then you pick what you want to do.
Right. It will suggest a spread. It'll suggest a naked one. And then that's a base for you to kind of... Maybe you don't have that much available capital in your account or whatever, so you can tailor it to what you want to do, or more risk, less risk. It's a good springboard for really... selecting better strikes and better risk reward for trades.
So it's designed for somebody to get a few
ideas
before he talks to his broker, and it's not designed for you to...
Right. Personally, I think that Apple's going to 180. This is just me, but if I were to put it in there, I'd say, okay, well, I like the idea of paying for this position, so it's going to give me a debit spread, and... Then it would say, what's your time frame? And then it'd say, okay, well, you should buy the 175-180 call spread, or you should do a short put spread or something. And then you can kind of plug in a few options to your broker, or talk with your broker about what it says, and then they can assist you further based on your specific account.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if it would... At some point, if you could graph it out, but hopefully you could do the graph yourself, one would hope, but the broker should be able to help you with that, one would think.
Yeah, it's our opinion. This is a springboard rather than a...
It's not designed as trading advice. It's designed as just information.
Right. It's information, and especially if you're doing option trades you know, not professionally. So the professionals are going to find it more intuitive to just go directly to the broker. This is to get you to that pro type level of, okay, if I want a debit spread, this is kind of the strikes I'm going to be thinking about. If I want a credit spread, these are the strikes I'm going to be thinking about. This is the time frame. And
does it work on futures too?
It will. Right now, we've done the listed stocks on Interactive Brokers. So anything that's got a ticker on IB, I think, will come up.
So if I want to put gold options on the Board of Trade or whatever.
Those are futures. I'm not positive we have the data for that.
Okay.
But you can...
Because you get those up on IB.
But, yeah, the concepts are the same. So if you do it into the ETF, you know, the spiders are going to be very similar to the S&P, the E-mini. All
right.
And the Qs are going to be very similar to the...
On that note, what do you say we go off the break? S&P futures down 17, NASDAQ futures down 105. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jock.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at cognoshr.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and
Hello, Arizona. This is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. at Burn on the Board. We have Greg Pappas in studio, and we'll have Jan Flanagan here in a second. What am I doing here? I'm over on the China page here, and I'm supposed to be doing the other stuff. Evidently, did you see this? Where China is now going to block some chips from here. We're not sending some over there. Now they're trying to block some of ours.
AMD 20% of their revenue is from China.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be good for those dudes. But I've got them down. Actually, I've got them down 3%. I'm sure that's why. Around 581 this morning, trading 173.84. Intel are in the Dow. They're down $1.74. They're down 4%. So it's one of the reasons why we're down here this morning a little bit. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 13. I call that flat. FTSE down 33. It's 0.4%. CAC around down 37.5%. So down a little bit over there. It says Kingfisher slips after profit. I know the Kingfisher was an Amos and Andy. Who's Kingfisher? Yeah, of course you don't remember Amos and Andy, but you guys probably never watched it since it's been banned. Nikkei down 474. That's 1.2%.
I thought it was a bird or a beer.
No, the Kingfisher was guess what the lodge he was ahead of? The Mystic Knights of the Sea. You guys got lots.
Gotta get educated. We do.
I gotta get educated. Hang Seng down 25.2%. Shanghai down 21.7%. The U.S. on Friday. Dow, this is a weird day because the NASDAQ was up 27. S&Ps were only down 7, but the Dow was down 305. So, ouch on the Dow on Friday. We've got bonds 10-year up 1 basis point, 4.23. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.35. Japan unchanged at 0.74. We've got oil up 42 cents, 81.05. We've got Brent up 41 cents, 85.84. Natural gas down 6 cents, 160. RBOB unchanged, 273. How is it RBOB is unchanged? My gas price went up 35 cents last week. What am I missing here? They went up 35 cents all over the place. I don't know if you guys noticed that or not, but they did. Mm-hmm. We have foreign exchange, euro still 108, British pound 126.3. So kind of unchanged there. We've got gold up 12 bucks, 21.72. Maybe trying to make another run at 2200. Silver up 4 cents, 24.88. Copper unchanged, 401. We have Bitcoin up $1,000, 66,916. Boy, there's a mouthful there. Matt, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 6:38 a.m. on March 25th, 2024. As far as traffic, construction on the Kennedy has started up again and expected to continue until late fall. Currently expect heavy traffic inbound after Austin to Jane Byrne Interchange. Traffic inbound on the Eisenhower just starting up, but still relatively light.
He knows the button.
As far as weather in Chicago, we're back to more normal temperatures for late March. 45 degrees this morning, a high temperature of 58 degrees a day. Wow. Cloudy skies this morning as well. Tomorrow, expect rain around midday. Clear skies are expected for the rest of the working week. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 49 degrees this morning, mostly clear skies. A high of 71 degrees and clear sunny skies expected for today. As far as sports, yesterday we have college basketball. Yes, it's March Madness. And, of course, Purdue beat Utah State. That was 67-106. Northwestern lost to UConn, 75-58. And Texas A&M, and that's agricultural and mechanics, correct? Yeah. Lost to Houston, 195. Finally here we have in women's NCAA, Notre Dame played on Saturday and won against Kent State, 81-67. And Indiana beat Fairfield, 89-65. Just a little bit of MLB spring training for you. Cubs tied with Mariners 9-9. Meanwhile, White Sox lost to Colorado Rockies 7-3. So I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
John, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for the listen on Texas A&M too. Appreciate that.
Yeah, well, you know, for years I thought it was agriculture and mining.
All right.
There you go. I
gotta learn something every day, Tom.
Yeah, well, you know, we try and put up something on. I had a guy get a load of this. One day I get a call from an attorney, which is always dangerous, right? And he listened to the show, and he says, I've got this client for you. You got to come meet him. And I go, okay. I go meet him in Indiana. And he says, well, he's kind of unusual. He just got out of jail. And I said, all right, well, that's a start. I'm like, okay, then. We meet the guy at this place, and it's now closed. He pulls up in this brand new car, and a big, huge dude with a big, long, gray ponytail. I mean, the guy is—he's a monster. And I'm thinking, nobody messed with this dude in jail anywhere. So he sits down and he has like four black Russians before we even touch lunch, right? This is like 11 o'clock in the morning. And starts telling me his story. And it turns out he was this very wealthy family somewhere out of Texas. And he was always kind of a rough kid, I guess. So they put a will together where the guy doesn't really get any money until like his last aunt dies. I never heard of something like that. So finally the last aunt croaked, and the guy just got out of jail and he's got this dough. But they still put all this, whatever on him. But they were going to give him like $100,000, and the rest the lawyer wanted to give to me to manage conservatively, and they were going to leak out some money to him every year, but he wanted his stuff protected, and he wanted to use index program and some stuff in fixed income and blah, blah, blah. So a real conservative type of portfolio. And I'm talking to the guy, John, what a character. He's talking about his great-grandfather, somebody, started some business in Fort Worth, because he was originally a surveyor for the Confederate Army or something. Anyway, in one of the colleges, I think it was Texas A&M, but it was another place, there's one of his uniforms, or his Confederate uniform with the bullet hole in it and the blood there, was there, and he was this war hero. And he goes, the guy was a total sandbagger. He said he never got shot. It was somebody else's uniform or some story. He started rattling off all this stuff about his family and what a bunch of crooks they were, and how they ended up doing surveying and told the federal government his land was no good in Fort Worth. So they ended up buying it for like, 20 cents an acre and ended up being great land. I had this whole story from this guy about how bad his family was and how they got all this money they didn't deserve. Then the guy had a heart rhythm problem. He smoked like a fiend. He went into the table and stroked out on the table and died. So I never got the account.
Oh.
But I had to listen to this for like 2.5 hours where the guy pounded down drink after drink and was sober as a judge. Never even, didn't affect him at all. Anyway. See, that's what happens to you when you have clients once in a while.
That's an educational experience in its own time.
Well, I can honestly say I don't think I had any other guy quite like him, but he was he was interesting. God, my family's a bunch of sandbags. Well, they didn't like him either. They didn't give him his money until he was like 50. So it was mutual. All right, John, what in God's name is going on with the Chicago election? How does anybody trust any of this stuff at all?
All of the stuff you hear, Tom, about we got to make elections easier, we got to increase turnout, we got to cater to what people want to make voting as simple and straightforward as possible. Everything that's been attempted has just made the whole process look less dependable, less on the up and up. And as a result, you've seen voter disenchantment now that we haven't seen in 80 years. So I'm thinking that maybe this is by design, that the easiest election to fix is one that very few people participate in, where it's not going to you can read the tea leaves a lot more easily than if you got 85% turnout. So if you're planning to fix an election, I think it's better to suppress voter turnout, and they're doing a pretty good job of that, it seems. So
Just to set the table here, the one we're specifically talking about, because I think they're giving up on trying to fix the tax thing, right?
The referendum on.
Yeah, I think they've given up on that one. Yeah, I'm not sure they have actually, but
nobody has called it.
ABC has, or CBS has, somebody has. There's a big check mark on somebody. I went on somebody's site. I think it was ABC. They call it, but no, they're pushing on that one too, but. This is a contest between this O'Neill Burke and Harris, and Harris is kind of the successor to Kim Fox. He's the Tony Preckwinkle child, and then she's against it, right? And so she's against the political agenda, which means God knows what. She's white and she's not a progressive, and we don't want her, kind of a thing. But now. She originally was up by what, 8,000 votes, then it was 7. Well, miraculously, big mistake by the election guy, the mail-in ballots that came in the day before the election, he neglected to tell people about. Okay, so there's, now allegedly they're postmarked and all this other stuff. There's like 99.
No, they're not postmarked.
Oh, they aren't.
No, they're drop boxes, which are not postmarked.
Okay, well, I thought some were. I thought they changed the story and said that they actually came in the mail. But they originally, you're absolutely right.
Well,
Greg.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the story keeps changing. But now, if you were to, now we're talking about a 50-50 election, 51-49, by the up to this date. Now, anybody believes now her lead is only 2,000. So out of the 9,000, there was 7 for Harris and 2 for her. After the entire rest of 500,000 are essentially 50-50. If you could believe that, I got a bridge for sale for you. I mean, how could that possibly be? Unless, I mean, right, Jen? I mean, the numbers just don't add up.
No way you could use that as a case study in a statistics course or a probability course, you know, and make it fly. So.
Yeah, I mean,
what are you supposed to think, Bob? Of course, these ballots, I should call them bullets, were stashed away for just this kind of scenario where they could, you know, drop them, you know. And the more they cover up about their existence makes you think that this was the design all along, too. People are not that stupid, I hope.
Well, but you may not be stupid, but the combination of stupid and powerless is powerful. What are we going to do about it?
Well, what they'd like you to do about it is not vote. So,
well, I'm saying right now, if he miraculously creeps by 100 votes, what are we supposed to do about it? Revolt?
What would that look like, Tom?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Where do you even go get fitted for a sandwich sign these days? What am I going to do about it? I'm not going to walk up and down the street and not trade for people. And what am I supposed to do about it? I mean, I could talk about it on the show. Hopefully, you know, you can spread the word around a little bit that this looks a little funky. But what are we going to do? We're going to have a Stocks and Jacks revolt? We run down the street with muskets? I mean, you know, I think that, you know, take an inch, take a yard. In every election, it seems to me that one side or another gets more bold than they did in the last one because of the last time they got away with something they never thought they'd get away with. Or am I wrong here?
Well, they're discovering just how, you know, easy it is to subvert a system when you've got mail-in ballots drop, you know, weeks ahead of time you're voting, and you know people could drop out of the race in that period when you're voting, or some scandal can come to light that would make you want to redo your vote. Yeah. But there's no opportunity to do that once you voted. So all of these things are supposed to make, you know, voting transparent and, you know, make people feel comfortable about it, has had exactly the opposite effect.
Nobody designs anything for voting. They don't think it's going to benefit their side. You don't close a precinct in a predominantly Democratic area in a red state, not knowing that you're going to make it harder for the Democratic guys to vote. You don't do something in a blue state that you know that you're preferencing the Democrat people. I mean, come on, we're too old of kids, you know, cats to get screwed by this. I mean, right? Both sides do their best to screw the other side.
Now, do you know of anybody these days who is recommending people use the Postal Service? Except election officials?
Well, I mean,
the Postal Service tells you don't send checks in the mail, and I personally know people who are stories of checks that have been seized, you know, stolen out of drop boxes and washed and rewritten for different amounts. The post office now says don't send valuable things like checks through the mail. Well, is a check more valuable than a ballot?
Well,
they tell you, no problem, drop in the mail.
Well, here's where I ask you, never having seen one, because Lou's talked about in Denver or in Colorado and Oregon, which have had mail-in stuff for quite a while, that they're actually really good at it because they've been doing it for a while and they've kind of worked the kinks out. How exactly? Okay, I'm gonna mail mine in, and this I should know this, but since I have you, I can just ask the question, or Greg, what do I have to fill out? What do I have to do? Do I have to sign it? Do I have to identify myself? Do I put my address down? What do I have to do to let them know that it's me, in such a way where my name's not on the ballot, so they can't tell how I voted?
I have never voted by mail, although I think it was in 2020, I got a ballot in the mail. I request one. I got one, you know, big oversized envelope. Here's your ballot. Here's the envelope to turn it in. But my jaw just hit the floor. Did they mail these to everybody? Apparently they did.
I don't think I got one. My brother did.
That right away made me think that this, there's no real chain of custody that you can establish for this kind of mass mailing. We got any controls over who received this ballot, who completed it, who sent it?
Well, I think the problem in Arizona
was it duplicated.
I think the problem in Arizona when they had a recount is if it shows up, they check. You sign the envelope, and I think Greg.
Then they destroyed the envelopes. Yeah,
here's the question. You sign it across the spot where you seal it or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So you sign the envelope, but then they discard the envelope once they approve it.
No way they can link then the envelope to the ballot.
Well, it's the same way as if I went into the precinct, which I did, and they say you're okay, and they give you the ballot. Once the ballot's cast, they can't match me up with the ballot anymore.
Oh, they got it on your application.
What?
They have it on your ballot application.
But, I mean, they can't match me. It's not like it's numbered where they can tell how I voted.
Yeah.
I don't think they can tell how I voted.
Well, when you fill out the application for a ballot, you give your name, address, sign it the way you're supposed to appear in the rolls, and then they take that application and you're recorded as whatever sequence and the number of voters they've had that day. And they
record I'll be the 300th voter, but when it goes into the machine, they can't say that, Tom Howe voted no for the mansion tax.
Not at that moment. Because your name isn't on the ballot, but that ballot, the proof of that ballot's issuance is on your application. And
okay,
they keep those.
Right. Well,
they could actually link it up. I suspect they could find the sequence of it because the ballot's wrong. Huh?
Well, what Kevin mentioned in the banks, they actually use a it's an old program. They actually use a signature monitor. Now, what do these guys use? Now, this ballot comes in someplace. I'll tell you what the issue I had, and it was okay. This is a few years ago. I put down my address and all the stuff, and that's when they still had the book, right? Well, now it's online. But they still had the book, and they pulled it up, and they go, "Hey, did you change your signature?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And then I said, "Well, yeah, actually, I probably did 20 years ago. I probably used Thomas, and now I use just Tom." And the guy goes, "Well, do you have proof that you actually did change it that way?" So I pulled out my driver's license, and it says Tom on the driver's license. He said, "Okay, fine, you're good to go." Now, what if that would have been a mail-in ballot? What's the procedure? Do they let it go? Do they toss it? Do they see how I voted first? I mean, what? How would that conversation have gone if it was a mail-in ballot? There wouldn't have been a conversation, but what would they have done? Would they have just tossed it out?
I doubt if they tossed it if they liked what was on it. But.
Well, I'm saying this was a very simple conversation, and I pulled out an ID, and everything was all right. But now, what if I wasn't there? Now, it has to happen all the time. Where you can't exactly match the signature up. Who's going to make that call? They don't have a machine to do it, or.
How many precincts in the 2020 election had ballots submitted that exceeded the number of registered voters in that precinct?
Well, that's the beauty of it.
That to me is prima facie proof of fraud to me.
Well, what is the slogan? Vote early, vote often.
But what possible interest is in there in making sure that doesn't happen? Apparently, nobody seems to care if that happens or not.
Remember when we had Karen Reeves on and she was running? I go, "Remember the old Chicago slogan? Vote early, vote often." She goes, "Oh, you can't even say that." we never did that here. But, oh, yeah, we did. Well, she was a lady that told us her grandmother used to go and vote, and they gave her a turkey and a pair of pantyhose.
That's right.
I would never have guessed the pantyhose, but I would have thought you got a chicken and not a turkey. Turkey is a big investment. I mean, to carry the thing home is a big investment, at least that. If you got a decent-sized turkey, imagine all these older ladies lugging some 20-pound hurt turkey home down a block. How would you pull that off? Just saying. So, I mean, do you think they're going to try and get this guy in here, John, or are they going to take it the whole route?
Of course. Of course. And I'll tell you, Tom, that the thing, in a way, I don't really care which one of these bozos get in, because I don't think either one of them are going to make much of a difference. The reason we got Kim Fox at all was because Anita Alvarez was such a disaster, and she was supposed to be this triumphant, you know, candidate on a white horse. Then we get Kim Fox for two terms, and now we have, you know, two people who are neither of whom I really trust to do anything differently. So it, perhaps if the, you know, the division between them were a little clearer, I might be more upset about this. I just think it's evidence of some kind of factionalism in the party, where you got Preck Winkle and the people opposed to her that are duking this out. The result for you and me is going to be no different from what we have now.
Well, I want every one of this Teachers Union Progressive Party wing, every one of all those people lose. This power base at the Teachers Union, where they just put the mayor in and everything else, I think is incredibly unhealthy. I don't think that's anywhere near what a public union should be. I just, the whole mess I don't like. It's not like I don't like teachers or anything like that. It's just that is a power spot that nobody who's on the public dime should have, I don't think. Do you?
I'm with you there, because, you know, especially the faction that's taken over, you know, the Chicago Teachers Union. There used to be some fairly reputable people, I think. I mean, I didn't always agree with their positions, but I thought they had, you know, people skills that were, you know, suited them well, and they, you know, they looked good on TV, and they handled negotiations well. And then about 2010, when the whole thing shifted to these, you know, this radical faction that's running the show now, that's why we have the mayor we do. And this is the template they would like to repeat in every other big city. So,
well, the idea that they're out manning the precincts because it's like their candidate, I think that's abominable. Not that it's not your right to do that, but I, as much as everybody thought, like, the auto workers union were like bad guys, I mean, it never got to that, I don't think, did it?
No. I mean, they were, you know, using the public school students, you know, to, you know, go out and, you know, participate in the election process, which you to me means that, you know, you're telling them how to vote, and, you know, they're leading off to giving them time off from school to vote. I thought, you know, we let the inmates start running the asylum.
Well, what is the procedure for signing up? Can you sign up the day of the election now?
Yeah.
Well, so what do you have to bring with you? I don't even remember what I brought when I had when I signed up originally. How many zillion years ago?
Like, they wanted, you know, a photo ID, a utility bill that showed, you know, you received mail at the address at which you're trying to vote. You know, the polling place that controls that address. But it was just no, you know, that was unheard of for a long time. The idea that there could be multiple registrations.
Well, how do
the online system, it works a little better, I think, but I think that the whole thing is treated far too casual.
Well, how did the simple question? There's a lady who lives downstairs from me in the garden department, that I pay all the utility bills for, and she, you know, she pays me sometimes. But I mean, how did she? She was able to vote. She didn't have a utility bill there. How does that mean? That's where she lives.
Bill, or she could have a phone bill, or
I guess. I mean, but a phone doesn't mean you live there anymore.
Just means you're getting mail. You know, a current bill that shows that you, you know, it's to this address.
Oh, it could be some other. It could be a credit card bill. Doesn't matter as long as it's got
the credit card bill. Yeah.
All right.
In any event, I don't think there's the system never was so draconian that if you really cared about voting, that you couldn't easily live with the limits they placed on registering to vote. And you look at the history of registration numbers, Tom, in the city of Chicago. I mean, it is all over the ballpark.
Yeah.
You know, variances of up to 100,000 people in the same year between the primary.
What was the turnout? 20% or something?
20% at best, I think.
Hmm. Well, before we get a break, I got a good one for you about the degradation of humanity at this point. I don't know if I mentioned on Friday that I had gone to the Menards last week because, you know, I got my new truck for me. It's not new, so I'm fixing it up. And one of the things one of the headlights was messed up, so I was going to put all new bulbs in, right? And of course, I did some research. Who has the best headlight bulbs now? Because there's all kinds of them. And I decided to try this brand I haven't used before. They got all these really good reviews, and they sell them at Menards. So I head over to Menards in Homer Glen. So we're talking about a nice area. And I go there all the time anyway. I'm always hanging around with the Menards. But the I go in and I get the, you know, the brights and the regulars, the low beams and the high beams. I bring in a mechanic because he's doing other work. And he goes, you know those lights you bought? One of them, somebody had opened the thing up and pulled the bulb out of there and replaced it with an old bulb. And I go, you gotta be bleeping me. The guy goes, no. And he goes, it was somebody went in, and so somebody took it upon themselves, even though they're pretty expensive, $20 a piece or something for, you know, for a bulb. Somebody took it upon themselves to go stand there in the aisle and do this at a Menards. And I'm thinking, how could this even possibly happen? So I figured, why should I pay for it? So I bring it back. I was going there anyway. So I go up to the lady. I didn't even know what I wanted. I actually just wanted to let her know. I guess I would have been happy with, you know, $15 back or whatever one of them was. Actually, I would have been happy if, just to tell her. And I said, you know, this is going to sound really odd, but you see this thing of bulbs I bought, somebody had replaced one of the ones inside. I said, I'm sure you've never heard of this before, and you're looking at me like with two heads. She goes, no, I'm not. It happens all the time.
Wow.
And I go, what do you mean it happens all the time? She goes, yeah, it happens all the time. That's why the cashiers are supposed to open it up and check and make sure that the two of them in there are good. And the girl obviously didn't do that. And I said, well, no, she didn't. She goes, no, it's on us. And they gave me the full price for both of them. And I'm going, she goes, yeah, it happens all. We're not talking about the hood. We're talking about a pretty high-end suburb. And somebody, John, would you even think of something like that?
No.
It would never cross my mind. I mean, I was pretty much blown away. But that's the world we live in now. Anyway,
unbelievable.
SP Futures down 18. NASDAQ Futures down 107. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Hello and welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm tomorrow. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 95. You know, the only problem with that lead-in and the Blues Brothers. It's not. It's not 106 miles from Joliet to Chicago. What is it? About 60?
Yeah, it's not that much. I think they're fibbing on us there.
I'm going to say 55 to 60. Why don't you look that up?
I think you're right. Yeah,
it's definitely not 106. I know right where the jail is. I drive right. I've driven right by it a million times. It's right on Route 7. They used to have a. Are they still having inmates there? I don't know if they do, Jana. But there used to be a sign, all signs along the way, don't pick up hitchhikers for fear they just escape from the joint.
Just a quick Google search says about 46 miles.
Yeah, I was going to say like Phidias.
Not that bad.
No. They got 106. They must have taken a roundabout route.
Yeah, gone through probably Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan or someplace. Jana was actually ran into Eric last night for the first time in forever. And he just got engaged, good for him, to a very nice lady, Tina, who ran for alderman in Hyde Park, and she only lost by like 500 votes, and the other guy had like three times as much money. And Hyde Park is a very difficult place to run because there's a lot of really big buildings there that you can't get in and go door to door like you can houses. Mm. But Tina, real bright lady. Anyway, they just got engaged, and he's all happy, and so is she, and good for them. And he wants to come back on the show.
But wishes to both.
So one of his buddies who I've talked to a bunch of times, he's an amazingly real bright guy, an attorney, very, very, very liberal. I mean, the opposite end of the Jan Flanagan of the world. And it is funny, you hear the same stuff from the extremes of both sides. Don't take that as an insult. And he says, what are some of the major things on the show? And I said, well, look, one of the issues is trying to understand the labor numbers and where the economy is. And I said one of the biggest issues is, and we're not talking week to week or month to month, if you look at the last year, the establishment survey shows that essentially 3 million people have been hired at jobs. Household survey tells you, and I'll look it up for you with the exact number, basically tells you that nobody's been hired. And he says, well, you know, you can't believe it. Look, I'm not trying to barge into either one of these. I'm just saying they're both government numbers, and they don't disagree. And what I've been trying to find out is how could they possibly agree? So I've been asking everybody, one of whom has been Kevin, who obviously knows a lot about this stuff, and then Carl and Kevin. Kevin says it could be very. You know, and I said, look, what's the difference between the two surveys? He goes, well, I don't know. I said, well, I'll tell you. The difference is, if the establishment survey, if you get a second job, you're counted. Household survey, you're not. One person, one job. So the question is, could there possibly be 3 million or thereabouts, 2.5 million part-time jobs created in the last year that would account for the difference? Now, Kevin says they're cutting people's hours a lot in some places, and those people are all going to get a second job in order to make ends meet. So it's very possible that number could be done. According to the household survey, the February of 2024, there's 160.968 hired. Okay. And so at the end of the end of March last year, the end of February last year would be the March number, is 160,824. So it's up a couple hundred thousand. So it's up some, but not anywhere near what you hear on TV on the establishment survey. So he's like, well, you can't just interpret those numbers. I'm just telling you, we're both getting them. But if you believe, if you're a believer of how good the economy is and how good a job, quote, government is doing, you're just a believer. And I said the other thing was that Carl came up with the story. The story was, even though the hourly wages are going up, that the paycheck is going down a little bit or staying steady because the amount of hours are being cut. And he was like outraged that I would even come up with something like that. I mean, these numbers are all legit. You got to believe the good stuff. And I'm like, it's sort of like talking to a Trumper about what a good guy he is. I mean, it's like, okay then. I mean, why I don't understand why you can't people just can't look at the stuff at its face value and realize both sides are lying and have always lied, and the inflation numbers are not a Jimmy Carter problem. They're not a Biden problem. They're an everybody problem back to friggin' Nixon, for God's sake. Not maybe not Nixon. But who was in 68? Was that Nixon? It was, right?
Yep.
I mean, it goes back to Nixon when he went off the gold standard and put the war in a credit card. It traverses every party along the way. It's not this guy's fault or it is this guy's fault and that guy's fault. One or the other, right?
Example, Tom. You know, after the results started coming in on the referendum, the transfer tax jack up to provide an income stream for affordable housing and reducing homelessness. Brandon Johnson, who's in a pretty surly mood, said that all you have to do is look at the numbers. The reason this referendum didn't pass is because of all those Trump voters.
Yeah, well, I mean,
a couple commentators like what the Trump voters who assaulted Jesse Smollett. What Trump, the idea that only a Trump voter could possibly vote against this thing is beyond ludicrous. But shows. It's this old us versus them mentality. If you weren't for this thing, you're in that camp and you're deplorable, so get the hell out of town. This to me is like no solution to anything. I mean, if you can't be upfront about what the good reasons for voting against this thing, and it has nothing necessarily to do with party affiliation, if we can't get past that, then we really are in deep trouble.
Well, the debate I heard on that issue last week, and there's a guy on there and there's a lady. And she was, she was ecstatic because it was a new revenue source. It's not really because there's a transfer tax now. But just the lack of economic knowledge that he was saying that actually, if it's a tax on real estate, which it is, he goes, the idea if you want to make real estate more affordable to raise the taxes on it is economically ludicrous. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad idea or not, but that's true. You can't get around that one, right? Or are you always going to be talking about everybody is going to have to be... I think the fork in the road, as Yogi says, when you see a fork in the road, take it, right? The fork in the road really is that some people, I think most still, think that... In America, in my America, and I think your America, even though we don't agree on a lot of stuff, the idea is for everybody to be able to pay their own rent, to be able to get a job, whether you're homeless now or whether you're an immigrant or someplace. We would all hope that the process is you're not going to be an immigrant a year from now if you're still here. You're going to have learned some English. You're going to have to, or maybe half of them already know English. I don't know. You're going to learn some English, and by the way, you're going to be working someplace, and you're going to rent your own damn apartment, right? That is the idea, isn't it? I mean, I think it still is.
It should be, yeah.
But I think a lot of people don't think that. They think that there's constantly, to 20 years from now, you're still going to have a boatload of people that are somehow going to be getting this federal largesse, and that people are going to be providing public housing and stuff for people. That's, now I'm not saying that that's not going to happen for people that are down on their luck or that are maybe older or maybe have medical problems or something. There's going to be some of that. I mean, I don't see how you ever avoid that. But it's supposed to be a very small scale. Just about everybody else should be pulling their own weight. I think that's where we're all headed here, but I'm not so sure that a lot of people, if that's the chief locomotive, I'm not so sure that train is very long anymore, that everybody feels the same way I do. I'm not so sure that the whatever this progressive thing is. But the thing that appalls me, John, is, I'll argue with you and Kevin and so forth over the ideology, but I think we both want the same ends. I don't see for a second the problem I see whenever government does something is the amount of people along the way to pick off the money. That's the problem. I still don't know. And maybe we should go through for a little bit. This is not new. I mean, I look at the guys that are down the block from me across the salt shed. I don't see any big city trucks there giving them stuff. I don't see them giving them health care. I don't see anybody there except people pulling up with cars, opening up the trunk and dropping off, 50 things of water or 50 things of pop. Other people, I think the food depository comes by. I don't see the city doing squat. And they're talking about spending $1 billion. Where? I mean, I'm sure that someplace they're spending something, but I mean, I don't see any massive program with buses there and people getting physicals and taking people and giving people new clothes and getting a job. I don't see any of that happening to you. No, and yet the money's somehow being spent.
I don't know if it would be a good thing if you didn't see it either, but...
Well, I'm not saying it would be either, but if somebody tells me they're spending $1 billion, I'd like to see it spent. But I don't think the fallout shelters were, you know, at the end of the day, thank God, we didn't need them, and they were, a bad idea. But at least if you went into one and it said 60 people, there were 60 cots, 60 blankets, 60 pillows, at least the money was spent instead of being somebody having his little finger in a pie and grabbing it. Like, I probably went in 5 or 6 of them in the schools. I never saw one that said 60 people, and all of a sudden all the cots were gone and there were no wafers or no water. I mean, the stuff was at least there, right? I mean, that's all I'm saying. I'm just saying it was the best idea or whatever, but at least the money was spent the way it was supposed to spent. I mean,
in the months after the mayoral election last year, the transition team for our current mayor came out with this, blueprint for what they wanted to do with this, now that they have a progressive mayor and an even more progressive city council than in the past. And, they were pretty upfront about, their, bullet points about where they wanted to, what direction to go in. And one of them was, in so many words, it said, first we get the money. So to me, that's all this transfer tax madness was about. Let's get the revenue stream. We'll figure out how to spend it later. We don't have to tell you now what that means.
Yeah, we're going to be the big dispersers instead of people dispersing themselves.
Right. And there's, all the people marching around, the city council with their tax the rich buttons. This isn't good governance.
No. Well, to go back to, there's always going to be some people, like I said, that are down on their luck, that have some issues. And I don't know where you stand on this. I don't know. There's always the moral hazard piece. But we don't have to, we can argue about the people today and their platforms, progressive this, conservative that, whatever it is. The classic example of the two ways of doing things, if you just divorce yourself of everything that's going on today, is go back to the late 60s, early 70s. Now, I know, Matt Byrne's rolling his eyes over at the, it's long before Matt Byrne, right? So his eyes are being rolling around over there. But we had two contrasting views within about a 4-year period. And I'm sure, a lot of people weren't alive then, so I'm not asking you to remember. But when, we were very young, John, but Lyndon Johnson came out with this thing called the War on Poverty. I'm sure we've at least heard the name. And there were all these programs to bring people out of poverty. Hmm. And the, I don't know, John, maybe one of you guys look it up, but I know the only one I think that's still around is Head Start. All the rest of them have been tossed along the way. But there were all kinds of programs. And they spent spent all this money. And I remember at the time some conservative wag saying, if you just would have divided the amount of money spent by the amount of poor people and sent them a check, by definition, we wouldn't have had any poor people. So there are all kinds of people who are involved in this, education, this, that, these job programs. And all of them fell by the wayside, I think, except for Head Start. Am I right on that, Jen? And then all of a sudden...
Yeah, they're trying to make that, across the board for everybody. And that's the push, has been the push. The
but I'm saying that the rest of the stuff just kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
And then here 4 or 5 years later comes Tricky Dick, and he comes out, and it never became law. But I read it. I mean, I think I was out of grad school? I'm not sure where the hell I was. But I read it, and it was actually amazingly well done, if you agree with it. But it was something called the negative income tax. And it basically said, we don't care. If Matt Byrne wants to sit there in his wife beater shirt and drink beers all day and watch, tape football games, let's just send, and he sends in an income tax that he has no income. We don't care if he's a drunk, if he's too fat, he just likes football, or he's actually disabled. We're just going to send him a check.
Sounds good to me.
Up to a certain number.
Yeah.
And we're going to design it in such a way that if he got off his dead ass one day a week and worked something and made $50, we wouldn't take the whole 50 from him. We would take, 20 off the check. The idea is to gradually work him into the system where he never lost money by working for a day, and the more he worked, the better he got, money-wise. And of course, the amount of moral hazard with that. Wait a minute. We're just not going to send anybody a check. We have to have programs. We have to have this. We have to have other things. It was two totally starkly different views of how to handle a situation. And I, to be honest, John, I don't know which I prefer. I do think there's a little bit of a moral hazard with choice number two. But I don't really want 48 people. If I'm going to give Matt $100, I just want to give it to him. Maybe I don't want to give it to him, but I think I might just be better off giving it to him than to have four community activists in the way stealing 80 of it and he only getting 20. Right? I mean, I think there's a moral problem just handing Matt the dough, but I think it's more preferred than the other method, in my opinion. But you know, but that is a very stark contrast, and isn't that really the same thing we're talking about today? Which are we doing here? Or neither, or both, or a combination, or what are we doing, right?
It's the same reason why, you know, the idea of, you know, supplying aid to dependent children and incentivizing having more children without, you know, caring if there was a family to back, you know, up the raising of these children, so that you have, you know, pretty much destroyed family structure for a huge swath of the population, not just African Americans now, but whites too, where you don't have, you know, two parents in a household, and you have kids that are, you know, raised by the hair of their head, and nobody's looking out for them. But a lot of this, I think, is traceable to these, you know, programs that threw money at something as if this was the only thing to do to encourage people to change their behavior. Of course, it certainly changed their behavior, but not in the way that anybody wanted it to, I hope, or expected it to. So that now we have to kind of rebuild the idea that you need two parents in a household, even if you are living in good.
Well, John, how do you contrast? I mean, for whenever people talk about welfare, I think I'm one of the first people to admit that I was a huge beneficiary of welfare. And when I define welfare as getting money that you didn't specifically earn. I mean, any rich guy, Republican or otherwise, whose parents made it to 65 and had, you know, two new knees and a heart bypass to the tune of $300,000 that they didn't pay for, and neither did you. And they never paid $300,000 into Medicare. That I'm not saying it's wrong, but that's welfare, right?
Yeah, and they're old age assistance programs that the counties administered. I mean, those were, you know, part of this you know, support system before, you know, things like Medicaid and you know, came along, and before Social Security really was something that everybody, you know, someday looked forward to receiving. There were other safety nets that were supplied, and it certainly wasn't a federal government initiative that did it.
Well, actually, mine was.
And things like, you know, for people who had relatives who served in the military or whatever, you had benefits, you know, associated with that service too. So, but it was a piecemeal thing. There was no kind of.
Well, I wouldn't. I mean, in my case, it was not a piecemeal thing. My dad died in '56. I was 4. My brother was like 8 weeks or 2 months. And there's actually, when people think of Social Security, there's old age, there's aid to dependent children, and what are the other two? Disability, and there's a fourth. I don't know what's the fourth. There is a fourth. There's actually four programs. I don't know what the other one is.
The WIC or was it?
I think they might have death benefits in there too for funeral. Anyway, but my dad was a policeman, of course, so he didn't pay Social Security there, and their thing for dependent children was horrible, like in zero. But somebody, she found out about there's a Social Security aid to dependent children, and it turns out when my dad was in the Army during the war, he paid Social Security. So my brother and I got, I'm going to say, $150-$200 a month all the way through college. And she dutifully put that money aside in a bank account, and that paid for our tuition at Notre Dame and really my University of Chicago. Because, I mean, the tuition was $3,000 in those days. So, but I'm going to say, given the money that my brother and I have paid in taxes, being somewhat successful, that was one of the best investments the government ever made. I mean, not just as a you know, welfare system, but as an investment, because of the way my mother handled it, and you know, I went to school and had made know, paid taxes since then. I mean, I'm not paying $1 million a year, but certainly it was. But I don't. I mean, something like that, if used properly, I don't see that as a problem. But then again, what do you mean by used properly? I mean, I don't think that $200 a month would ever have had my mother run out and get pregnant by four different people to have four different kids. Plus, if they're not even on the birth certificate, how the hell do you get their Social Security benefits, for God's sake? Plus, they got to die. Right? Most of these people aren't dead, right? The guy's running around having trophy kids. So, well, I mean,
I'm not complaining that there were such programs at all and that people, you know, shouldn't have access to them. The thinking, though, has changed completely, I think. And it used to be that there was a stigma attached to accepting any kind of dole, wherever it came from. It was something you needed maybe at the moment, but the idea wasn't to turn this into something, into an intergenerational lifeline where you never got off of it. And nowadays you got politicians running for office left and right, you know, say that being on welfare is like a badge of honor. It's like, what an accomplishment. This is not really.
Well, I didn't think it was. I mean, I was without a dad. Not, I mean, know. I was without a dad, so it was not a good deal for me.
Nowadays, you got people saying just that this is proof that, you know, I'm entitled to more because look what I had to, you know, avail myself of already. We got to do this for everybody now too, and I don't buy that at all.
Well, there's a difference between being dead and not going to work, I think. just saying, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, but I mean, some of these programs made sense for people. Some of the agriculture programs made sense for people. I mean, we talked about one last week about shifting gears, but it's sort of the same topic. My brother Dan, when he was on the, he traded corn options for quite a while before PTI, and you know, Dan, like every other subject that he's involved in, he doesn't just show up and throw some trades around. He you know, he's going to learn everything there is to learn about corn, and that's why, you know, if we ever really get into the future stuff, we'll have to have Matt some morning because he knows, you know. Well, he forgot more about this stuff than I know. He and Greg are the experts, and but they came out with a program. They have all these people that are involved in these crop insurance programs for everybody. You know, what happens if, you know, you're there's a flood in your place or there's a hailstorm over your place? I mean, there's all these governmental programs. And one year, somebody said, "Wait a minute, why don't we just lend people the money to buy puts? So if the price of, you know, if the corn costs them $2 to get in the ground and the price is $3, we're just going to throw a, they can buy the, you know, the 250 puts, and if all of a sudden there's a problem or they don't have any grain, instead of them having no grain to deliver, they're not going to, I mean, the biggest problem with hedging yourself, I'm going too far into this, John, I know, sorry, but if you have 10,000 bushels of corn and it costs you $2 a bushel to and all of a sudden the price of corn is $2.50 or $3, what you're supposed to do, not supposed to, if you want, you want to do, because you're not in the pricing business, you sell two futures at $3. So you've essentially sold your corn in advance. Now, if the price of the corn comes flying down a buck, you lose a dollar on what you planted, but you made a buck on the future, correct? Or the other way around. If it races up, you're pissed because your corn is now $5 instead of the, you know, the $3. But oh, by the way, you've locked it in, so you've made $3 on your spot, and you've lost $2 on the future. Well, a lot of people didn't want to do that. Why don't we just buy puts? Why don't we buy puts at $3? So the price goes down to $1.50. The problem with the story A is, if you don't have the corn to deliver because you got a flood on your thing, now you really got a problem because you've lost $2 in the future. And you have nothing to sell. So this was my brother said it was an amazingly successful program for like a year or two, and all of a sudden they bleep canned it because it was so simple. You'd have gotten rid of all these people working in these, you know, crop insurance programs and all this stuff. You had to fire everybody because you wouldn't have needed them. So everybody said, "Oh no, let's get rid of the new program instead." So a lot of times, a simple program, you know, doesn't last either. So, you know, I mean, I think something like aid to dependent children, meaning the father or the mother are dead, is different than, I had, you know, somebody has five kids from five different people. And this is not just a black problem. It's happening in white areas too now.
Right.
I mean, that's totally different. We have this, I mean, well, I guess what we're trying to not say, John, I don't want this permanent underclass. I don't want anybody being an underclass. I want everybody to have a job and not have to work, not be on the dole from government, because it has to really suck being like that, I think, as a as a human being, you don't want to be on the dole, do you? I don't.
Well, you don't want people who can only be on the dole. I mean, this is not how governments...
Well, there's always going to be somebody who has some kind of disease or something that you have to take care of. But, I mean, society's always been like that. There's always going to be, you know, half of 1% of the population or 1% that somehow has issues, physical or otherwise, that the rest of the people got to find a way to help take care of. But when it becomes 10 or 15 or 20%, now you got a problem, I think, right?
Well, what we're doing now is incentivizing people going out and getting four or five different IVs for whatever, you know, different support system you're relying on that day. And of course, there's no, you know, government dole that's big enough to sustain that. And but we're doing it, you know, and we're encouraging it. It seems like we're recommending it, you know. So I don't, the pipeline will run out at some point, I hope.
Well, but, if we continue on, we the government, because we got a dash here, and we'll bring Audrey on. Hopefully, he can hang around. If we continue where we're going with this inflation, because I think John, you would agree that the theme of the show really is all this stuff is the same subject. It all depends on each other. If we continue to go down this road with inflation and inflating the place so the government can pay people back in money less, and the taxes go up because you've inflated stuff. Oh, by the way, the car is 80 grand instead of 40. So the taxes are double on it. Well, that's cute, I guess, but not good for people. If you do that and you continue to drive the price of the rentals and other things out of people's, you're going to end up having to subsidize more and more just so people can live. So you can't just do one thing without the other. And that's why you can't do A because it causes B, right?
Right. Anyway. I think we're poised. We're going to see, you know, I see it already. Houses around me, Tom, but a severe drop in sales prices from the listing prices, and
really?
staying on the market way too long, and it finally sells for $200,000 less than it was listed at. And I don't know if this is a trend at this point, but it's something I can't say I've seen.
Well, why don't you hold that for Audrey, because some of the listings are total pie in the sky. They'll hear about somebody who sold something 3 years ago and they want the same price, and well, you know what they say, people in hell want ice water, right? SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ down 91. Be right back with John and Audrey, and I'll try and shut up while you guys talk real estate.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, no big stocks and jacks. Time how Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures down 16. NASDAQ futures down 95. Man, why don't you do a traffic weather sports? Because I've totally gagged my machine by having all these labor and everything else open here all at the same time.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 7:36 a.m. on March 25th, 2024. As far as traffic, downtown, construction on the Kennedy causing some delays this morning. On the inbound, expect heavy traffic inbound after Foster Avenue to the Jane Byrne Interchange. Traffic inbound on the Eisenhower picking up. Expect light congestion from Harlem Avenue moving forward downtown. We're back to more normal temperatures for late March. 47 degrees this morning, high temperature of 58 degrees today. Cloudy skies this morning, a light rain expected downtown later this morning. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 49 degrees, mostly clear skies, a high of 71 degrees, and clear sunny skies for today. As far as sports, in college basketball, it's March Madness. Yesterday, Purdue beat Utah State 67-106. Northwestern lost to UConn 75-58. And another one for you, Texas A&M lost to Houston 100-95. In the women's NCAA, Notre Dame played on Saturday and won against Kent State 81-67. Indiana beat Fairfield 89-65. And finally, we have Blackhawks. They won on Saturday in their game against the Sharks. Final score 5-4.
They were down 4-0.
Yeah. Big comeback for them.
Yeah. Five goals in a row. One in overtime.
That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed, yes.
Hey, Aud. We have you and we have John. John was just mentioning... John, why don't you continue your story about the housing stuff in your neighborhood, and then maybe Aud can... compare with what's going on down by her.
Hi, Audrey. Mm. Yeah,
good morning.
The example of a place down my block that it's a newer building, it's about 20 years old, and it had been listed at close to 700, and it just closed 2 weeks ago for something like 520, which I may have expected it to drop a little bit, at the end, but not that much, and I'm not sure if that's portent of anything else that's happening, if you're seeing things sort of teetering and heading back in the other direction, or if that's just an anomaly.
What I think is going, I've got two scenarios going on, and I think this is pretty much everywhere. If it's still a nice house, updated, move-in ready, things are still getting in a bidding war and going over list price. But if you've got a house that's a problem property, whether it's dated, location, it's sitting. There's a couple houses that have been sitting for 6 months, 8 months, 10 months that the people have overpriced. And instead of figuring out after maybe 10 months something's wrong, just leave it there. And to your point, by the time you finally do sell it, you'll probably get less than if you priced it appropriately for the market. So I have two very different things. Things going for records amounts, and actually our MLS reported for the year for the area that we are was at an all-time high for the past year's prices, even rentals and sales. So it's a very interesting kind of dichotomy in the market going on right now. But so if you got what everybody wants, you're in, and if not, well, you better price it appropriately.
Well, you're flipping up and down on your volume. Is there something on your end?
I'm not touching it. Do I need to call back in or something?
No, we'll just keep going. We'll hope it clears up.
All right, let me see. All right. Let me know if that gets any better.
Well, you drop down, then you drop up.
And maybe get closer to your mic.
Yeah, maybe get closer to the mic or something.
Okay, how's that?
The other way.
Huh.
Your mic is coming in and out, but... So there's, is this a, you think some of it, Jan, is a reaction to the higher taxes that are in the, I mean, I don't know, it's maybe too soon for that, but is that a possibility?
It's a possibility. You know, some of these properties that I see sitting on the market for a while have had kind of checkered past. I think they were like Airbnbs for a while. I think they might have been trashed inside or not, you know, kept up very well. And maybe that's the reason why somebody's gotten greedy and thinks the property should yield more. But it looks, you know, anything but top-notch to buyers who are looking at it. So I wonder if it's, you know, just something that's... Are people like maxed out in other ways now? They have to dump property at any price just to get out from under because they can't afford it anymore with the taxes or with their job situation. And you're seeing evidence of a kind of, you know, desperate seller. And I guess if Audrey, if you think inventory is ticking up now, which you would expect it to, are you seeing, you know, activity commensurate with that? Are people looking as aggressively as they are, you know, putting stuff on the market too? Is it a kind of healthy, you know, setting from just an inventory standpoint?
Yeah, you know what? Can you hear me any better?
Yes, it's better.
Yes, okay.
A lot better.
All right. You know what, Chad? It's very interesting because, yes, if something's on the market, there's buyers there. And I have right now maybe six buyers of my own that are either well-qualified or cash and nothing to put them in. And we get something and people just, they're just running for it. I noticed the volume in closed for Northern Illinois MLS has ticked up dramatically in the past week and a half. I was seeing an average, we get postings of how many listings go under contract in our Northern Illinois MLS, which encompasses, you know, the greater metropolitan area. So that's a lot of land from Wisconsin, you know, out west and all the way back, you know, south of Kankakee. And I was seeing for a while high 100s, then it was in the twos, mid twos, three. And I looked this morning and I had 402 sales signed up in the last past day that were actually logged as a contract signed. So the spring activity is happening. I think what's happening is that some people always have to move, whether it's a birth, a death, a divorce, an estate. There are always some people that have to move. Whether you're forming a new household, you're stopping one. So something's going to come on the market. Something's going to have to move. But what I think is happening is what we, I think we talked about before, is the people who would have gone from the 500 house to the 700 house are squeezed back down into the 400 or 500 for the interest rate. So you're causing a bottleneck and more demand in the low to mid price range that wasn't happening a couple of years ago. The demand was spread out over a much greater, let's say maybe from 300 to 800, it's supposed to maybe 250 to like 5 now.
Oh, and how many areas, I mean, there's always a, you know, there's a sensitivity to this. It's that every market has its own. I mean, you look at, I use gasoline as an example. If all of a sudden there's just a little bit shortage of gas, the price runs up 40 cents. And if there's all of a sudden a little bit too much, it runs back. I mean, gas is amazingly sensitive to, you know, to 1 or 2% of the market changing. It just always has been. But I mean, in your industry right now, you've been, you know, talking the whole way, and obviously it's behaving the whole way. You've been absolutely correct, and in your area, knows there's no like panic sell of any kind yet. I mean, Nancy was on last week saying the same thing. Yet some people appear to be somewhat stressed. In other areas where you hear about people getting laid off, the prices kind of are flying down because all of a sudden there's 30 houses on the market and nobody to buy them. I mean, how sensitive do you think it is where if all of a sudden things turn down just a bit and if there were 50 on the market, would you and all the people that have the buyers backed up, would you satisfy the need? And all of a sudden after that, it became a buyer's market? I mean, how close are you to the edge? I mean, could you make a statement? It seems like in John's area, the edge might have been reached, and maybe the taxes did that. And now there's more in the market that people really want. But that clearly hasn't happened in your area. I won't even say yet, but it hasn't happened there. What would cause that to happen? How many people all of a sudden would have to say, I'm out of Orland, or I'm out of wherever it is, Southwest area? I think your area is pretty safe, actually, based on your opinion.
Well, and we have a very diverse area. We have everything from, you know, one-bedroom condos up to multi-million dollar homes. So there kind of is something for everybody, which makes it a very, you know, diverse, attractive area to live in. There's a big price range of homes. But it's, and to your point, it depends. You know, if a big company gets up and leaves a small town, well, obviously that's going to devastate everybody. And the whole Southwest side tends to run a little differently. It's a pretty consistent area. If you want to go back to what Southsiders, it's like a Southside root state. These are a lot of people who are your blue collar. A lot of them were very established, saved their money, lived beneath their means. So we still have a lot of that type of person, along with your very, you know, strong, high-end, white-collar, professional crowd. But it's almost like they don't live quite as close to the edge as, you know, I've seen some other neighborhoods do, where maybe they're more affluent and all of a sudden those jobs go away. Like in the tech industry, you have a lot of times people who are just plugging away, trying to do the right thing, and have maybe a little better formal financial setting. Instead of all the cars are leased, you know, your everything is, credit cards are run up. It's not something, it's really kind of interesting, but it is something that is a predominant view growing up in the area. It's very interesting. It's different than the other parts of Chicago, where people are more transient. It seems to be a very generational area, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
But it's I don't know. I think that if like anything else, you get adjusted to what your reality is. And the reality is you're not going to see 3% again. That's come and gone.
Right.
So the reality is they are what they are right now, 7, 7.5. If we're lucky and they tick down to 6-ish, you know, it's going to, we're still under the historical norms. But the problem with the historical norm is where the prices of the homes are at now. So do you put a lower down payment on? You're basically still paying so much more between a 3% and 7% mortgage. You might get something, but you're not going to get what you had. Now, are the builders going to look for that market? I don't think so. They might provide a buy down. It's a tough situation here, but unless you turn into a massive, you know, I mean, things could change on a dime. You guys know that. We could go from, I think we're in a recession because so many people are struggling with these prices. It shoved us into there. So can people adjust? Yes. Doesn't mean they like it. Would they like to get the bigger house and go out and get some nice furniture? Hell yeah. So they're going to go along for now, because a lot of times you have no choice. So what? You're going to make do, get what you can, and hopefully you either refinance or you trade up down the road when things change.
Well, where is the, I mean, if you're a numbers guy, like I get accused of being, if you were to look at what's happened, just even in the last 2 or 3 years, you look at the home prices and you look at the interest rates, I'm going to say that everybody, unless, I don't know, where you could possibly be, under a rock somewhere, or have somebody who's the assessor has to be your brother-in-law or something, we're talking about taxes that have gone up, I think, across the whole county, maybe the city's worse, and we have, you know, home insurance rates that have gone up. I mean, just by the stuff I looked at last week, what we talked about last week, John, what, home insurance is up 20%, car insurance is up 22%. Yep. Money-wise, Odd, I mean, you know, you and I discuss this a lot. Money-wise, if your taxes and your insurance go up, let's say $500 a month, that's just like, or $400, whatever it is, money-wise, that should mean that the house that was $400,000 is now $385,000, because the person can't. It all comes down to the monthly payment. Yet that really hasn't happened. Is it because, and yet money wise I just get there cringe, because I go, I know someday it has to. I just know it. Unless income, you know, spurts up more than anybody thinks it's happening. I mean, you can't numbers wise take the opposite side of that argument and say it doesn't make any difference, because it does. Now maybe
no, it does make a difference. I agree, but I think some people are looking at this as a short term problem.
Okay.
I think they're saying, let's just get ourselves in somewhere and hope we could refinance in a year or so. Now, I'll tell you what, if they lower rates to 6% or down to 5%, all bets are off. This economy will take off again.
Well, I mean, you think is it coming out in other ways? I guess, Jan, Audrey, and I were nice, we were fortunate enough to go to this, been to this place in forever, one of our buddies. We met him in the middle and had, you know, dinner at a casual place on Saturday night. And it's a nice bar kind of restaurant, mostly bar, but got a little bit upper end bar food. And everything was really nice. What did we do? We left at 10 o'clock and there were five people left in there. Is it spitting out in those ways now for at least a little while where people are cutting back on other stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, if you make the same money you made last year, you're in a hole already. And that's probably 99% of the world. So you're making the same, you're working just as hard, and you have less to show for it, so you've got to cut back somewhere. I mean, first time in my life, I'm looking at a grocery store, you know what, I don't think I need that. So it's just, you're going to look at it that no matter what income strata you're in, you're going to feel a pinch somehow, unless you're the extreme one percenter that doesn't have, I mean, if you've been in the market, you're rolling in dough and you don't really care. You don't even notice, so you just go buy whatever you want. But, you know, if you didn't get in on NVIDIA when it was, what, $48, then, you know, you're just working for a living at a poor schmuck and hoping to make ends meet.
That's us, John, the poor schmucks.
Yeah.
Is that a technical term? A poor schmuck?
Yes, it is. I researched that one. but I think it's unfortunately true. I mean, everybody who's done the right thing, worked the job, tried to put some money away, you know, it doesn't matter. And this is, I don't care what they say, it's a recession. And if you look at the every day, more and more companies are laying people off. There's been mass layoffs in some big corporations. And what they say, it's a recession until you lose your job, then it's a depression. Isn't that the old saying?
Well,
so they're pushing people right to the limit. So to your point, can it go the wrong way? Anything can go the wrong way. But I'm thinking, you know, if they've got to give people some relief with these food and gas and utilities and housing prices, if they want to break the entire backbone of the country, keep it up.
John, could I characterize what Audrey just said in a broad economic way? Because I think what she said was absolutely spectacular. But when you deal with people the way you do, and I see it all the time, obviously you and I are together a lot, you're concerned about that person. You and Nancy have an amazing view of people, their finances, and what they need, and helping them out. I mean, you guys are terrific at it. I mean, it's not just saying that, but it's true.
Well, thank you.
Well, but I mean, your record shows it. I mean, it's not just because I'm saying it because I'm saying it. But Odd's actually got a couple of pretty good clients off the show, which is interesting.
Delightful clients. So give them a shout out. Good morning, Tom and Gail. Okay, go ahead.
what I'm saying, Jan, is what Audrey just described is if you look at the people you deal with, and you look at their situation and where they were vis-a-vis 3, 4, 5, 1 year ago in terms of income and savings and so forth, you get a totally different view of our economy than if you look at the big numbers with the amount of money that's poured in the system where there's just so much dough. If you look at the gross numbers, it appears that everybody's doing fine because the numbers are just... I mean, there's no way with the price increases that you can't have a GDP increasing. But the question is it real or nominal? And what Aud is saying, even though she not, maybe doesn't know she's saying it, she's saying it's not real. It's more nominal. But if you actually look at individual people, they're not growing in terms of reality than what people are talking about on TV. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so. Because it's not like a general prosperity here at all that I can see. Certain people are doing pretty well, but the ones who were doing well before are doing better now, maybe, than other people. But it's definitely out of whack. It isn't a uniform thing at all.
I think what Art also is saying, I'm putting words in your mouth, Art, it's not, the growth we're seeing is not an income growth, it's a wealth growth. Yep. And that's a big difference. It's a huge difference, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I mean, Art, when you and I, you know, Art's only, what are you, Art, 25?
Yeah.
When we were young, you save money by making $100, living on 90 and putting 10 in the bank. That ship, how far is that ship out, John? Now it's, if you have fixed assets, including stocks and homes, if you own the right stuff, that's where your wealth comes from. I mean, it always did to a certain extent, but now it seems like an amazing amount of the wealth is from that and not. I mean, how many people do you know? God, oh, I remember when we first came to the trading floor, and how many guys, John, this was, you know, in the early 80s, there were guys that were making, you know, 100, 150 grand a year that were 25 years old, living with two buddies for $200 a month rent, and a drink was $4. I mean, talk about wealth from your income.
Right.
But who's doing that now?
Nobody.
Nobody. That was a part of the world. I don't think young people even understand that now, how you could possibly have made 100 grand a year and your rent was like $300. God. I mean, and what was a car, Rod? 2,500, 3 grand? I mean,
yeah. I remember buying my new Oldsmobile Cutlass with the T-top, custom designed for like $7,800.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
$4,800. I take it back. $4,800. I remember that.
Those things.
Then it got stolen in Chinatown one night. I was devastated.
Oh, God. Audrey, what's your take on the NAR settlement? Just to kind of get, because I've been thinking about this a lot in the last week or so.
You know what? It's just, they're still settling it out, but it's such a, it's been so poorly reported and without right, you know, so much is wrong that the press is saying that it makes me crazy. And the problem is that the people, whoever decided to prosecute this, it's another kind of like witch hunt thing. Oh, let's go after the realtors. Well, the problem is too, NAR is not, is a separate company. It got sold off when I was in the business when the National Association of Realtors started, and it was to help protect the realtors, blah, 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 all that good stuff. And the foundations, if you've ever read the realtors' creed, it starts as upon all is the land. And it's a beautiful paragraph to read about what realtors believe in. It's a nice thing to look up. But what happened is, even now, NAR had gotten sold to Move Inc. Then it got sold again. So this is a separate company. Our dues have quadrupled. Do they do some good things? Yes, but it's something that, it's almost like belonging to a union now. So unfortunately, this got settled, and they kept telling us that wasn't going to be, they weren't going to settle without talking to the members, blah, blah, blah. So it came out of left field to everybody. But it basically isn't going to change a whole bunch, because I don't know of anybody in my profession that is fixing commission, because you kind of just do your own thing, and we're forbidden to discuss commission.
Well, you've been competitive for as long as I've known you. I mean, who is able to, like, now still ramrod this 6% down on people? Is that the Coldwell Bankers? Like, I mean, you've never been there.
No. Well, as a company, you're free to do whatever you want. But, like, I can't go out with a bunch of realtors to go, hey, Joe, why don't we just charge everybody 8% and call it a deal? It's against the law.
Well, sure it is. Sure it is.
So we cannot collude at all. But companies, whatever they may be, Apollo Baker, every company can set their own standard, but you cannot discuss it with 40 other companies. So that's in our laws. It's a very, very strict thing. Be that as it may, what is that we're, from my understanding, and details are still coming out and it's not fully settled, is that when I go into my MLS and I'm looking for houses to show people, we can see that somebody is paying out to the buying agent, which would be me, the listing agent would be paying out to a buying agent, maybe a 2%, a 2.25%, a 2.5%, a 3%, a 1%, they vary. And you could see that. So what they're going to do at this point, it appears, is remove that from our view so we don't know what we're getting paid. Now, it's so cooperative.
Well, you're zipping in and out again.
Will exist in some form, but we have to have buyers. I don't know why. I'm doing the same thing.
Yep.
I don't know what we'll do. We'll have our own buyer's agreement, which we've supposed to, the association's been wanting to do, where I come to you and, you know, you're going to work with me and you sign a form saying, okay, you know, I'm going to work with Audrey Johnson, blah, blah, blah. And you sign that. So basically it's so that the buyer knows what the deal is and that the agent knows that they're like, hopefully you're not going to wander off and buy a house from somebody at an open house after I've worked with you for 6 months. But the premise, I think, is that the public, and we're running over time, and I'll probably have to shut up, but the premise they don't realize is buyer's agents work so hard, especially in this environment. I mean, I cannot tell you. I don't know of anybody who will work for free for 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, with somebody for free, with no compensation, showing houses. And in the last 2 years, when competition's hard, I've had people that I've shown 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 houses to before they bought one. How many people would do that for free, betting on the fact that you could produce a positive result for yourself to make money? So if I show you houses for a year, what does that come down to?
Well, there's no, 10 cents there's an hour? There's no attorney that would do that, would there, Jen?
Of course not.
Well, if I tell people, you know, to your point, if the attorney goes to court and you lose, he sends you a bill. If the doctor operates on your relative and he kills you, he sends you a bill. I don't get paid unless I perform. And that's how all realtors work, and I think people forget that.
Well,
Could you just invoice your time for these, you know, so much to show a house, and then... If I show you 10 houses, there's a bill outstanding, and expect it to be paid before you show another house. Could you get away with that?
You know what? They may force people to that.
Yeah.
That okay? You know, if I show you two houses, I'll charge you this. But if I have to show you more than a month or two, then hey, my time, my money, my gas. We're working for free until.
Well, we got a dash. Why don't we tee this up as a separate? Because on the other side. The listing agent pays for all the advertising and all the pictures and stuff. Well, I mean, duh. Why should they do that? I mean, if everybody's going to start worrying about the commission they're getting. Anyway, is this a it's a
people
bigger...
People want to rock the boat, but sometimes it's pretty good the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, when they have the drone guy coming over John's house to take the pictures, Audrey's got to pay for the drone guy, John. He sees you there, you know, rearranging your sock drawer through the window. With the drone. I'd love to get a drone and send it around John's place looking in all his windows. He'd wonder what the hell is going on.
I'll get you one for your birthday.
Oh, God. Perfect. SP Futures down 50, Nasdaq Futures down 94. Thank you, guys. Good stuff. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Bye. Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Losing his mind.
I did not know that.